Soicles. United States is for Fig Newton. It was named after Newton, Massachusetts.
Oh.
I haven't had a Fig Newton in a really long time.
It's because they're bad cookies.
Man, you're really downing on a lot of things that I like this morning. Jeez, don't yuck my yum.
Don't what?
Don't yuck my yum.
Got it.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Will AI curb our loneliness? Will it curb your loneliness? Are you open to having AI make you feel a little bit more like you're not going at this alone in the world, either in the form of a pet or even the form of a significant other? 844-967-2789. Would you ever be open, and this is judgment-free, to exploring an AI pet? Because, you know, you can't necessarily have a pet in the place that you live.
Right.
The expense of having an actual live living pet is not available. Allergies, or
just
even
don't have time.
Or even, you know, wanting someone to talk to and having an AI girlfriend, boyfriend, friend in general. And does this help or hurt when it comes to the loneliness epidemic? We would love to hear from you on this topic. I think this is fascinating. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. You're also welcome to leave a comment on the live stream, if you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter, where you can always watch us as we do this show every day.
It's up to you.
And I think this is super interesting because it was almost 2 weeks ago. It was the last time Greg was here on a Wednesday. I remember we talked about that it has been proclaimed that loneliness is now an epidemic in the U.S. and it is a public health crisis. And now the advent of AI-driven chatbots could make, you know, arguably make human contact even more scarce, despite it potentially being presented as ways to curb loneliness. And so is this something that is helping or exacerbating the problem? And so I guess, you know, in the long haul, I just don't think, because even in like chat rooms and social media, like even when you know you're talking to an actual other person,
right,
via text, via DM, via whatever, like I'm pretty sure it doesn't replace face-to-face contact with people as far as our socialization and getting like the endorphins of actually connecting to a human, let alone separating even more of like, oh, you're not actually talking. Because somewhere in the back of your mind, you always have to know you're not actually talking to a human, right?
I would think so, but enough time goes by and that line might get blurred a little bit.
Because experts are worrying that AI might further cocoon people from relationships and conversations that they actually like, they need mentally for their mental health. But in the short term, like AI-powered companions, so either pets and mental health support services are already being drafted to fight the loneliness epidemic. And because, you know, right now we don't have enough therapists. We've talked about this a lot on this show. We don't have enough therapists. We don't have counselors. We don't have care providers in the United States to support every lonely person that needs, that could benefit from talking to someone.
Right.
And so there are AI services that can be scaled to poorly served regions and actually offer help 24/7. And is like, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Is this something that you feel like you could benefit from? 844-96-PARTY. Because 3 in 4 Americans say they experience loneliness. And I just think it's interesting. I just think, like, if this could be something that is a tangible, even if a short-term solution. And because on the positive side, advocates point to a list of applications where AI can provide loneliness relief. So there's like virtual therapists that can benefit veterans reluctant to open up to a real person and people struggling to access in-person therapy in native languages. AI conversations might be a boon for the 77% of Americans who say they want to age in their own homes. So people who are not, don't want to...
They don't want to go to a nursing home.
They don't want to go to a nursing home. And so they want to, but they still want to be able to talk to someone. AI can help with fall detection.
Oh.
There's 24/7 support from AI that's different than actually having access to a therapist. And so it's like out of hours backup and like clinical help and like having chat-based existing on, you know, being able to look back at patients' notes. And also in rural areas, because 3 in 4 counties in the country lack the cash to expand access to health, like behavioral health services.
Right.
And so are there advantages to this? 844-967-2789.
We have Eric from TOSA on the phone. Hey, Eric, what do you want to say?
Hello. Yeah, I'd like to say this kind of already exists in a way through like phone sex and chat rooms in a way. But the problem is with this, and it'll become the problem with the AI, much like that, is it's not free. It's not going to be accessible to all. So even if it is a miraculous thing, it'll be something that only that with those with means can access.
Well, and I think it depends, because it's funny that you mentioned the sex rooms, because literally this weekend news was made that there's a Snapchat influencer who made an AI girlfriend version of herself, and she made $70,000 in a week because she was charging $1 a minute for people to engage with her like AI girlfriend experience. And so I think that you're right, like Eric, I think there's going to be experiences for like girlfriends, pets that like you have to pay for, but I do think that there might be something there for the, you know, Department of Health Services and stuff for some of the mental health of like having some of the chat rooms to like do triage that could be interesting. What do you think?
Well, as you said, from an industry or a resource that's already short everywhere.
Yeah, short
but
everywhere.
What I'd like to say also real quickly is that I believe, because as a Gen Xer, you know, even online dating is foreign in a sense, or kind of, you know, not to judge, but it's difficult for Gen Xers to kind of comprehend meeting your significant other online.
Yeah.
Is I think millennials and Gen Z folks will pick up on it. And the few people, you know, not even few, but the minority of Gen Xers and baby boomers that are tech savvy and open to it and all that would embrace it. But I've seen too many 60-something Luddites that refuse to even get online to imagine that the big group that's absolutely lonely in this country, which are the old folks, the seniors, mm-hmm. et cetera, are not going to be really helped by this because they're frightened by it, because we keep them frightened by these things. So
yeah,
that's kind of my 2 cents on that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Eric. Thank you so much for calling. 844-967-2789. Will AI curb loneliness? 844-96-PARTY. Mark from the SAC joining us. Hey, Mark, what do you want to say?
Well, I couldn't help but think of the subtitle to the novel, science fiction novel, Blade Runner, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
Yeah.
Is AI a new life? Actually, will it become actually a new life form? And and you can't help but remember 2001: A Space Odyssey, where Al the computer got, you know, kind of crazy, and how far we've only gone. I mean, it'd be far better if people be more contact with just people rather than relying on AI.
Well, and maybe
that's just the way we're going to go.
I don't know, but Mark, I worry about if the only contact you have is a relationship with AI. Doesn't that pretty much guarantee you're never going to have any conflict with that being? I mean, are they going to program AI to argue with you like an actual friend would? Because otherwise, you're just going to set up way unrealistic expectations for what kind of interactions you can have with real humans.
Well, get a dog, because a dog actually listens to you, and they might not respond, might not answer back, but.
But they love you.
Or even a cat. And yeah, they love you.
Cats, I don't know if they always love you, but the dog does. Thanks so much for the call, Mark.
Yep. Have a good day.
No problem.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY. All you cat people, feel free to call.
Yes, feel free to
defend cats.
I I actually say that as a joke. There's been some cats that I like. But
there have been some great cats.
Cats certainly do not love you the way a dog loves you. And most cat owners, I think, would agree with that as far as the cat will sometimes, you have to earn their affection versus a dog who just unconditional. But it's funny that Mark mentions Blade Runner because I was talking about this this AI girlfriend, Karen AI. So is a 23-year-old influencer named Karen Marjorie, and she has more than 1.8 million followers on Snapchat.
Wow.
And, you know, so she worked with a company to basically come up with an AI girlfriend. And so her followers have to pay a dollar a minute to engage with it.
A dollar a minute?
A dollar. I mean, but that's what, like, the sex chat, like, the sex lines were, like, a dollar a minute.
Wow.
Aren't, like, psychics also a dollar a minute or something wild like that?
I don't know.
And it's the beta test went down last week, and she made like $70,000. And the AI experience could eventually bring in as much as $5 million a month.
A month?
A month.
Which, I may have to rethink my career path.
I mean, you know that there's people on like OnlyFans who are making that kind of money too. But this seems a lot easier because the scale is enormous.
Yeah, and all I want to have to do is talk. Trust me, you wouldn't want to see me. 844. 967-2789. Scott from Chicago. Hey, Scott. Thanks for joining us. What's up?
Hey. So I was not sure if I wanted to bring this up, but you mentioned influencer, and I saw that article yesterday, and then the potential harms of how to interact with normal people. I saw an article about a week ago about AI-inspired explicit images. And there have been reports of physical harm because people are trying to recreate AI-generated images that are physically, biologically impossible.
Like sex acts?
Yeah.
So it's like they're trying to do Kama Sutra that is like actually not possible?
Yeah, AI-generated images that people are making are biologically humanly impossible to do, and people are trying to recreate it in the bedroom, and they're going to the hospital because of it.
Do not try unless double-jointed.
You can't bend that way. That's not normal. That's hilarious, Scott. Thank you so much for calling. We're right up against the break.
Right against the break. We're going to keep this conversation going. 844-96-PARTY. How do you feel about AI as your companion, pet, or partner? This is As Goes Wisconsin.
If you're lonely, heartbroken, you gotta take. If you're lonely, heartbroken,
Real Chili's been serving up mouth-watering goodness to the people of Milwaukee since 1931. Their famous secret award-winning chili recipe is the same as it was back then, and a local treasure. From lunch to dinner to late-night breakfast, Real Chili has you covered. And now you can bring the Real Chili to your next party, tailgate, wedding, or office gathering with their unbeatable catering options. And don't forget about their Real Love Party Packs, perfect for small groups, and pick up from their two convenient locations, downtown Milwaukee and near Marquette University campus. Visit them at realchili.com. That's realchili.com.
Zocalo Food Truck Park is so much fun. They have such variety in one place. You name it. Ice cream, bagels, sushi, tacos, pizza, to tasty sandwiches, and a fun full bar to boot with some craft cocktails and beers. You can even host a private party or reserve a heated hut. Support local food entrepreneurs with family and friends and taste Milwaukee. Open Tuesday through Sunday. Find us at ZocaloMKE.com. That's ZocaloMKE.com.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Mr. Theodore Twombly, welcome to the world's first artificially intelligent operating system. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
Are you social or antisocial?
I guess I haven't been social in a while.
How would you describe your relationship with your mother? Thank you. Please wait as your operating system is initiated.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Samantha.
That was the trailer from the 2013 film Her, starring Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson as the voice of his AI girlfriend.
Yep.
And it's wild that, you know, 10 years later, this is a real thing. And I remember, because it's not new, right? The whole point of that movie is how real Samantha, which is the robot,
right. Or
the AI, was, and the relationship that they created. But there was also at a similar, I think a couple years prior to that, maybe 2006, 2007, there was Lars and the Real Girl.
That's right.
And that was controversial because those real dolls, you know, are basically
sex toys.
But they also get used as companions, and your live-in girlfriend that is a doll that is like thousands of dollars and with like silicone, like the skin feels real and the hair feels real and everything like that. And so the attempt to create things, intelligence that can be companion and provide companionship to antisocial people. It's not brand new with this AI, like Karen AI,
right,
that was, you know, premiered last week, or because even the pet thing has been around. You mentioned this morning, but I remember I was in middle school when I got my first Tamagotchi.
That's what that was, right? It was a pseudo pet.
It was, you know, you wore it in your little like your belt loop.
You had to keep it alive.
You kept it alive. I think the most I ever kept mine alive was like 5 days. Just saying something. Maybe it was why my mom never let me get a dog. She knew that I'd kill that too. But you know, and so they've improved obviously since then. But they can be programmed with realistic personalities and physical features like fur and tails that wag, and you know, living pets. Obviously, I think you and I don't have to be convinced. Bring a lot of benefits.
Absolutely.
Which are proven to be being able to reduce loneliness and anxiety for owners.
Better health.
But promoters of AI pets say they can offer similar benefits for those who can't take on the responsibilities and costs of keeping a pet alive. And so if you think about people with dementia, who obviously don't have the capacity anymore to take care of a pet.
Right.
City dwellers who live in buildings that don't allow pets. But there is one company called Tombot, which is a startup providing robot dog companions. And the CEO of that says that his devices are alternative to psychotropic medications.
Wow.
That turn seniors into zombies.
Oh, my. But I have to tell you, a number of years ago, I volunteered with HAWS, the Humane Animal Welfare Society, mm-hmm. out here. And I used to take kittens to nursing homes, and you only got to spend like 5 minutes with each person in there. But I think for those people, for people in nursing homes, for people who are in hospice, I think that would be a huge benefit.
Just having rotating pets come in.
Yes, I really do. I think that would be enormously helpful because I would only get to spend 5 minutes with these people, and as much joy that it brought them, it was not nearly enough.
Yeah.
The interaction was not nearly enough. And I could maybe see that for myself down the road. When it gets to the point where the dogs need to get walked. Dogs need regular exercise. Dogs are different than cats.
Yeah.
And have, I would say, greater needs, on a daily basis.
What about an iguana?
Oh, ew. No.
What about turtle?
I had turtles.
What about a Chuckasaurus?
Oh, no. I'm very dog biased.
Dog biased.
I am dog biased.
But yeah, I just, I think it's interesting. I think it's like all of this, the AI frontier is here. I know that there's a lot of people who are trying to curb how fast it's moving. But I think it's short-sighted to think that there's not actual solutions that could help people. granted, if you have to pay for it, that doesn't really help the people who need the help the most.
Definitely.
But I think it's interesting as far as it getting brought up, as far as what it can do. You know, if you think about, it's just like, how do you like quality control that? But you think about the number of people, like since the invention or the see, this is happening again.
it's going to be a couple more
the
months.
The 988 number, since the, you know, the 988, the mental health hotline,
right,
came about last summer. You know, every month we see that there's record numbers of calls and how many people are using it, which is great. But as far as in if you can use the triage of that, where there's more people who are the actual humans on the line who get the escalated calls versus the first contact, is there, there's their uses there. And again, until we get more therapists and more mental health, like, is there something that could actually help? I don't think a dollar a minute AI girlfriends is necessarily the best use of this technology.
I would agree with you.
But, you know, who am I to tell people how to spend their money?
Texter from the 920 says some health systems are already using these types of things.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So with the, you know, you can call in and talk to some AI, maybe as a potential screener to start off with. But
yeah,
it's here. I just, you know, it's like the guys who want to reanimate the woolly mammoths. Look big picture. Just look out a little further.
It's like Jurassic Park was 1994.
I
Did
know.
We not learn anything
it
from
just
that movie?
Look a little further out.
Was it 94? 92? Anyways, when we come back, Mark Sommerhauser, Communications Director and Policy Researcher at Wisconsin Policy Forum, is going to be back to talk about their report from last month, kind of breaking down the differences between Evers' approach to tax reform and Devin Lemieux's approach to tax reform. So stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Three, four, one, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. Cause I'm the tax man.
How are we gonna spend our largest budget surplus on record? Will it be on tax reform? Maybe. It could be. Fears potentially likely that our upcoming 2023 to 2025 state budget could bring big tax changes. But what will that look like? We have two competing tax plans, one coming from Governor Evers, obviously a Democrat, who has proposed income tax cuts. But that differs from Devin Lemieux, state Senate Majority Leader in the state Senate. And both plans are pretty different as far as who benefits from them, what revenue it brings in, and how it kind of frames and argues for Wisconsin to be a more competitive place for labor. And so returning to talk through this is Communications Director and Policy Researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum, Mark Sommerhauser. How you doing, man?
Hey, Kristen, it's good to be back with you.
Good to have you back. So we're a little behind the ball because I think you guys released this report early April. Has much changed since you published this?
Well, the good news is not much has changed. and so I think it's still quite relevant, not least because as we see the state budget debate start to take shape, I think it's pretty clear that this is going to be one of the biggest sticking points. This is going to be one of the things that if we can hopefully see our Republican legislature, our Democratic governor come to some sort of an agreement on a budget, this is going to be one of the toughest issues to resolve and one of the last sticking points between the two parties. So that's why I think it's useful to take a look at the two proposals here.
Absolutely. So let's start with kind of breaking down, because I kind of have the same questions for each plan. So if we start with Evers' plan, what does it actually do?
Okay, so the Evers' plan is somewhat more complicated in the sense of there's kind of more moving parts to it.
Okay.
It does. So I'm going to try to summarize those as concisely as I can. basically the broad picture is that it makes use of tax credits, both refundable and non-refundable tax credits, to target income tax relief primarily to low and middle income taxpayers. And there are a few people, a few taxpayers who would pay more under the governor's plan. Most people would pay less. And typically that does correlate with income. So people with higher incomes, generally speaking, would pay a little more. Obviously, the majority of Wisconsinites that are in that middle income spectrum, as well as those at the lower end of the income scale, would generally pay less. Now, we always have to give the caveat, everybody's taxes looks different. Mm-hmm. We can't, there's no way we can say everyone or no one. You can't really make those kind of statements when you talk about how a tax proposal would affect people, but you can look at how it affects, say, the average person at a certain level of income and draw some conclusions about, you know, the broad impact statewide.
And what would the threshold be of the people who would have to pay more?
Yeah, so essentially it's around $200,000 a year in income for an individual. I don't have that number in front of me for a married couple, but I believe it's in the 300 and some range for a married couple. That is kind of the inflection point where people below that point would pay a little bit less under the governor's plan. People above that level, if you're just above that level, you would pay a slight bit more. If you're way above that, if you're at the, let's say, $1 million a year or more income, which obviously is not a whole lot of Wisconsinites, but there are some, those folks would see a much larger increase in their tax bills. So, you know, the governor, to kind of give a very quick overview of kind of the way the governor is trying to accomplish this, you know, the biggest, by far the biggest piece of his proposal in terms of tax relief is he wants to create a non-refundable income tax credit that would basically equate to 10% of a person, of a individual or a couple's net tax liability, or $100, whichever is greater. This would be a new credit that he would be creating. This would basically apply only to people at the individuals at the 175K or less income threshold, or that number is higher again for married couples. Those who are filing jointly. And so that's kind of the biggest piece of his proposal. He also has some either new or expanded tax credits that would aim to help people offset some of the expenses that they incur from caregiving, either from childcare or from those folks who are caregiving for adults.
Okay.
So there are other pieces to his plan. There's just no way to summarize it in 30 seconds or a minute, but those are some of the biggest pieces that are kind of the biggest elements of it.
Mark, going back a little bit about who would have to pay more if this would go through, I just want to go back in time a little bit. The wealthiest Americans got a pretty healthy tax cut under the Trump administration, which are going to stay permanent, correct? As opposed to the big $33 a month in savings that I got, from what I understand, that's going away.
Yeah, so obviously that would be contingent on what the president and Congress would do at the federal level. But, you know, with the Republican House now, I think, you know, you can say that it's pretty unlikely, at least for the immediate future, that they would roll back those tax cuts that were enacted. I think it was in 2017 under President Trump. So, yeah, that is true. It is also true that, you know, here at the state level, so obviously our research does kind of focus on state and local issues. We just actually had a very large income tax cut in the current budget, in the budget that was enacted here in 2021. That was one of the biggest income tax cuts in state history. It was about $1 billion a year in total income tax collections that were reduced as a result of the budget that Governor Evers signed back in 2021. And that was tax relief that did apply across the spectrum. It was, you know, I would say more targeted at folks in the high to middle income tax ranges. It was the third bracket that was reduced. And so that is, I think, important context to understand kind of going into this budget, is that both under Governor Walker and then now under Governor Evers, we have been reducing income taxes in Wisconsin from what had been a pretty high baseline prior to Governor Walker. But we've been reducing income taxes over more than a decade here and under two governors heading into this budget.
We're talking to communications director and policy researcher Mark Sommerhauser for Wisconsin Policy Forum about the two proposed tax plans that could change how we pay taxes. And that's probably a good, as far as reducing income tax, is a good segue into the other plan from Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux, which wants to do a flat tax, correct?
Yes. So this one is a little more, a little easier to explain because it is pretty simple and straightforward, but it would have a much more significant impact in terms of how Wisconsin collects income taxes. What Senate Majority Leader Lemieux has proposed is to shift us from a graduated or progressive income tax where the amount that you pay in taxes, the rate that you pay, the share of your income that you pay goes up as you make more in income. Senator Lemieux wants to make us one of, I believe, we would become the 12th state to have a flat income tax, meaning all income in the state would be subject to the same rate. And under the Lemieux plan, it would be 3.25% would be the flat rate for all income under his proposal. Most states, including Wisconsin for right now, do have that progressive or graduated income tax, but there are some, including Illinois, our neighbors to the south, that have a flat income tax. We would become one of those. Currently we have four different brackets, four different rates depending on income, ranging up to as high as 7.65% for folks at the highest income level.
So just a question, for you said Illinois, because I feel like when we talk about Chicago and Cook County, it's expensive. But so in Illinois, They have a flat tax, but then do counties and cities have the ability to set their own taxes, which we all know, but we can't do in Wisconsin?
They have much more ability in Illinois to impose other forms of taxation at the local level. I don't have it right in front of me, but I know, for instance, there are a lot more local sales taxes at the local level in Illinois, which generally are very restricted here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Counties in Wisconsin can collect a half-cent sales tax, but other than that, municipalities and other localities really cannot do that. So, yeah, it is true that if you look at sort of the overall tax picture, you see some higher levels of taxes paid, especially in Cook County and in the city of Chicago, that just reflect a really different philosophy there in terms of letting local governments collect other forms of tax.
And I bring that up only because I feel like so often it's hard with, it's not always apples to apples as we compare ourselves to other states because of local control, because of overall tax burden, when we talk about income taxes versus sales taxes versus property taxes and all these other things of like how they try to make up revenue. And so with kind of the apples to apples of these two plans that would both are being presented in our state, what is kind of the tax revenue differences, the projected tax revenue differences between these two plans as far as what the state could lose or gain?
So that's one of the biggest differences between these proposals, because the Evers plan would essentially be almost a wash in terms of tax revenue. It would have a very slight negative impact, meaning the state would actually lose out on about $43 million a year in tax revenue under the governor's proposal. So that, in the context of the state budget, that's not a large amount of money. Under the Lemieux plan, very different picture there. So the Lemieux plan would phase in. All of it would not take effect right at first, but by the time it were phased in by 2027, it would be a reduction in income tax collections of more than $5 billion each year going forward.
Wow.
So that's a big difference.
That's like almost significant.
That's 5/7 of our current record surplus.
Wow.
That's a large amount. And another way to think about it is like, so for the 2022 fiscal year that we completed here, total income tax collections all throughout the state for the year were about $9.2 billion. So you can see that under that proposal, it would be a very fundamental shift in terms of how we collect taxes in Wisconsin. We are right now, Wisconsin was actually, a fun little trivia fact, was the first state to implement an income tax at the state level back in 1911. And we have historically been one of the states that is more reliant in terms of how we collect tax revenue and pay for state and local government services. We have historically been one of the states that is more reliant on the income tax. And I think it's clear that, the Lemieux plan is thinking about wanting to fundamentally rethink that approach and in terms of how much it decreases tax collection. So that's, again, one of the biggest differences between the two plans.
And the other biggest difference, at least the way that I gather it, is who benefits and how much they benefit. It seems like, to put it in crude terms, middle class, working class people get a break of $100 to $500. Like, it's a break. They get some, but it's not like, you know, going to change their trajectory as far as how much money they're putting out versus the top earners in Devin Lemieux's plan could have a huge windfall, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's basically true. I mean, you have to keep in mind that, you know, Senator Lemieux's plan just is a much, much bigger tax cut mm-hmm. overall. So there is just that there's more money to kind of spread around to give in tax cuts. And yeah, you're correct. I mean, everybody under the Lemieux plan would see, nobody would pay more. Everybody would see at least a slight reduction in their taxes, at least across all income levels. Again, with the caveat, everybody has different tax liability, but across all income levels, each income level would see a decrease under his plan, but it would be much, much greater for folks at the higher income levels. The way to think about that, I think, is that for folks that are making above that top bracket of $280,000 a year for individuals, I think it's $375,000 about for married couples, those folks are currently paying on the income that they make over that threshold that 7.65% rate. Mm-hmm. So now under his plan, that goes down all the way down to 3.25%. Yeah. So you can see how big of and we did a quick sort of look at how the average taxpayer would be impacted.
So let's look at that when we come back, because we're coming up against a break. So we'll talk about that. Okay, our guest is Mark Sommerhauser, who is the communications director and policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum. We'll be right back.
Because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.